Welcome back. Today we're tackling a problem that doesn't get enough attention but quietly costs everyone money. Repeat financial crime, especially insurance fraud. Why do people keep doing it, even after getting caught?
Yeah, and it's tempting to think it's just bad actors making bad choices. But when you dig into it, it's a lot more layered than that.
Exactly. Let's start with the human side. One big factor is financial literacy. A lot of repeat offenders simply don't have the skills to manage money or plan long-term.
Right, so when financial pressure hits, fraud starts to look like a quick fix instead of a serious crime with consequences.
And that connects to another issue, critical thinking. If someone struggles to weigh risks or challenge their own reasoning, it becomes easier to justify cutting corners.
Like telling yourself, it's just the insurance company, no one really gets hurt. That kind of thinking lowers the barrier.
Then add unemployment or underemployment into the mix. If stable income isn't there, the pressure ramps up fast.
Which brings us straight to the fraud triangle: pressure, opportunity, and rationalization. When all three line up, fraud becomes much more likely.
And not just once. It repeats, because nothing in that cycle has actually been fixed.
Now let's zoom out to the system itself. Courts are overloaded. Prosecutors have to prioritize violent crime, so where does that leave insurance fraud cases?
Often pushed down the list. They get reduced charges, quick plea deals, or get funneled into generic programs just to move things along.
And here's where it gets frustrating. These cases are complex. They take time, documents, detailed investigation.
But the outcome rarely matches the effort. That's what some call the return on work gap. Prosecutors put in the hours and get minimal impact.
And it's not just prosecutors. Insurance fraud investigators feel it too.
Absolutely. They might spend weeks building a case. Interviews, timelines, evidence. Only to see it dismissed or watered down.
That kind of outcome is demoralizing. It can even reduce future reporting because people start thinking, what's the point?
And from the offender's perspective, it sends a dangerous message. Low risk, low consequence.
So then we arrive at diversion programs. Sounds good on paper, right?
In theory, yes. But most of them weren't built for fraud. They focus on things like substance abuse or general life skills.
Which means they miss the core issues: financial literacy, ethical decision-making, and the specific ways people justify fraud.
So offenders finish these programs with the same pressures, the same thinking patterns, and now a record that makes employment even harder to get.
That's basically a setup for repeat behavior.
So what's the alternative? Specialized fraud diversion programs.
Programs designed specifically for this type of crime, teaching real-world money management, strengthening decision-making, and addressing employment barriers.
And importantly, helping people understand the real impact of fraud, not just on companies, but on premiums, communities, and other policyholders.
It also directly targets the fraud triangle by reducing pressure, limiting opportunity, and challenging rationalization.
This isn't about being lenient. It's about being effective, preventing repeat offenses instead of just reacting to them.
And it actually supports everyone in the system. Prosecutors get meaningful outcomes, investigators see their work matter, and losses go down.
So the takeaway here is pretty clear. Financial crime recidivism isn't random. It follows patterns, and that means it could be addressed.
But only if we stop relying on one-size-fits-all solutions and start targeting the real causes.
And for those in the insurance world, especially fraud directors, there's a real opportunity to lead that change.
All right, that's it for today. If this got you thinking differently about fraud and prevention, we'll be digging deeper into solutions in future episodes.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.